Hi, I'm Tim Bailey, and you're listening to Life Minute.
You've known him for years in front of the camera, on Wings, Private Practice, opposite real-life leading lady and Madam Secretary, or his latest Netflix hit, Leanne. But you may not know that behind the scenes, he's a fierce advocate for the arts in his role as president of the Creative Coalition, which fights for arts funding, free expression, and education in schools. Tim Daly sat down with me recently at our studios in Times Square to tell us all about it and more. This is a Life Minute with Tim Daly. Tim Daly in the house, yay!
Hi.
A longtime fan. I'm so happy you're with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you have a lot going on.
I have been most recently on a TV show on Netflix called Leanne. So funny and so dear, and so I just adore her, and I'm so happy for her success. You know, they just got picked up for a second season, so perhaps I'll do a few more. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. You're my favorite part of that.
Oh, thank you.
So good. Anything else that you're working on?
Well, I have a movie called Dust to Malibu that I produced and acted in that I shot last year in Springfield, Missouri, that's going to be at the Burbank Film Festival and the Woodstock New York Film Festival. So I'm, you know, traveling around with that a little bit, trumpeting that. It's a beautiful father and daughter story that is very dear to me. It's a tiny little movie, but I think it's beautiful and very moving and funny.
Oh, that's great. Did you always know you wanted to act too, or?
I didn't. I mean, my parents were actors, and my sister is an actress,
yes,
obviously. America's Tyne Daly, as I call her. So I knew it was something that people did, but I think because there were actors, I had actors walking around my house, I wasn't particularly impressed by them. Then I started doing some acting, and I knew it was something that I had some aptitude for, and something that I really, really liked doing. But what I didn't know is whether or not I had the personality for it. Because I've known lots of people who have magnificent talent, who don't have the personality to be rejected 1,000 times before they get the permission to act professionally, we're talking about. I had to find that out for myself. But it was funny, you know, growing up, the dinner table conversation from time to time would be about Shakespeare and Ibsen and Shaw and Chekhov. And I got to New York without knowing that you had to have a headshot and a resume. I was like, what the hell? Like, they gave me no practical advice whatsoever. So I had to figure that out
really?
For myself, yeah.
And you're recently married. Congratulations,
I am.
Finally.
I know.
Time. What took so long?
Well, you know, I asked Tay to marry me, I think, about 9 years ago. And she said, yes. She said, let's just wait a minute. Then 9 years later, she asked me, and I was like, yeah, I already asked. Anyway, so we got it done.
Aww.
Yeah, and it's really, it's kind of amazing because it is a little different.
How so?
It's just, I don't know, just there's something, it's better. Yeah, I like being married to Taya.
Yeah, you're a good couple.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
We
just look great together. What's your advice for, like, making it work?
That's a hard thing to say because every couple is different, and Tay and I are crazy about each other, which is really lucky, but also we have true intimacy, I think. We actually talk about everything, including the bad stuff. You know, part of my sort of daily routine in life is to, you know, spend a little time being in gratitude. And I realized at some point that I was being grateful for all the low-hanging fruit. My kids, I have food, I have a place to live, my dog, you know, all that stuff. And I've recently started to try to have some gratitude for the things that have been really challenging and painful, because I wouldn't be here without all that stuff. And so being able to share all of that with my partner is a relief, you know, just creates an atmosphere of real trust.
When did you realize you were in love?
God, about 4 minutes after I met her at the office of Madam Secretary. I'd met Taya twice before because we went to the same high school, 10 years apart. I'm way older than she is. Way older.
Wow.
Hear that, babe? Way older. I was doing a fundraiser when I was doing Wings. I was at Paramount, and she was there, you know, like a smoking hot 23-year-old or something. And I didn't pay her any mind because I was in the midst of all kinds of stuff. And then I met her again because her then husband was a friend with my first cousin. So I'd just kind of shaken her hand a couple times. And then Madam Secretary happened, and she just kind of caught me in her tractor beam. And I was terrified. I was like, oh my God, I'm crazy. Anyway, it was quick. It was very fast.
I have goosies.
Yeah.
It obviously helped your role.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, every time people said we had great chemistry, I was like, yeah, no shit. Oh, sorry. Yeah, it was funny because our first season we were supposedly trying to keep it quiet, you know, be on the down low, but it's like, you know, the Teamsters were picking us up, you know, at each other's house all the time, and, you know, we're like looking at each other, goo-goo eyes. Anyway, you know, if she were here, she would tell this story, but she was still at this this little boarding school in Vermont, the Putney School, when I made Diner, and it was a little bit of a splash, you know, because kid from this school, like, you know, is in this movie that's getting attention. And she saw the movie and she told her her roommate that she was going to marry me someday, having never met me. Yeah, so.
Wow.
She, you know, she gets what she wants.
What do you guys like to do when you're not working?
I probably shouldn't talk about this. She'll probably be mad at me. But recently, this is really weird. We have been spending a lot of time at this cabin in the wilderness that has no electricity. And we found these big burls, you know, those sort of knobs that grow off of trees. And we've been making these kind of art. I don't know if they're like, if it's art or if it's like a 50-pound salad bowl. But we've been making these, but we've been carving, like wood carving, making sculptures and stuff like that.
When did you get involved in the coalition? When did you become president?
Oh, gosh, like 1843, I think it was. No, it was a long time ago. I've been doing this for a long time, maybe 15 years. You know, it was interesting. Robin Bronk, the CEO, asked me to come to Washington with a delegation to talk about arts funding and the National Endowment for the Arts and walk the halls of the Senate and the Congress and meet some people. And on the train down there, I was reading this biography, this Walter Isaacson biography of Einstein. And I was fascinated by the fact that Einstein, who was this huge-brained, you know, theoretical astrophysicist and all, whatever he was, when he got stuck on a mathematical problem or on a theoretical problem, he would play his violin. And I started thinking about the connection between arts, creativity, and imagination. And what I realized is that the imagination and creativity are muscles. And those muscles need to be exercised like any other muscle or they'll atrophy. And the gym for the creative mind and the imaginative mind are arts. That's where blue sky thinking and the great ideas come from. You know, there's been a lot of talk about STEM education, and I think that I'm actually the guy that coined the phrase STEAM education in 2008 when I was at the White House and got kind of pissed off because they were trying to get me to promote STEM. And I said, where are the arts? I said, first of all, STEM is a terrible acronym. It sounds like stem cell research or like a florist convention. And second of all, you know, arts are the thing that puts engineering and all this other stuff into a human context, right? An engineer without an imagination, just a technician. You know, you can get a robot or a monkey to just press a button or something, but it's the people that have the next big idea, the blue sky thinking, the things that no one would have thought possible that we need to nurture. And that's one of the most amazing things about this country is our creativity. And in order to nurture that and support it, we need arts. For some unknowable reason, there's always a politician or two who want to zero out the budget of the NEA and do away with that program once and for all. But we've been there to save it many times, and we're trying to do it again, and we have a lot of allies. So we're hopeful and pretty confident that we can do it.
And what's going on exactly? What's proposed?
Well, the first proposal, there was a budget that came out that proposed zeroing it out. We have enough allies in Congress that they put it back in at a budget of $135 million. And then we have enough allies in the Senate that they put it back at its former number of $207 million, which, by the way, is minute. It's a drop in the bucket of the federal government budget, but it's also incredibly impactful and effective because it's one of the few government programs that's actually a moneymaker. And in this era where a lot of folks are talking about efficiency, this is actually something that's putting money into the federal coffers. For every dollar spent by the National Endowment for the Arts, it returns about $9 in economic activity to the federal government. You know, when I started doing this work at the Creative Coalition, one of the things I read was that children who have a full curriculum in the arts are three times more likely to graduate from high school. What shocked me was that even armed with those statistics, a lot of people were against having arts in schools. Now, the NEA isn't necessarily about arts in schools, but one of the things that people misunderstand about it is that they think that it's an organization that gives money to Hollywood or Broadway or something like that. It couldn't be farther from the truth. The amazing thing about the NEA is that it gives money to every single congressional district in the entire United States. So it disproportionately benefits small communities and small cities and rural communities who otherwise wouldn't have any arts. And their kids and their community wouldn't be exposed to dance or theater or music or a library or have after-school programs. And their veterans might not have an arts program who are suffering from PTSD. So it's important to understand that everybody in the entire country benefits from this program.
And what is the coalition like? Or do you guys differ politically? Or
we do. I mean, I would be lying if I said we weren't predominantly progressive. I think I don't really know how to describe it. I think that I don't really know, frankly, where a lot of people stand. But we do have conservative members, and we certainly have a lot of friends in Washington D.C. on both sides of the aisle. You know, one of the other things about the Creative Coalition that's so great is that we believe powerfully in freedom of speech. So we do argue about stuff and about, the approach to getting what we want. I think we're all on the same page because we are a nonpartisan organization, and we don't think of arts as being a partisan endeavor. If I were, running everything, I would make sure that everybody had arts, and I would make sure that everybody had music especially and food, because the arts bring people together. They really bring people together. Everybody goes to a concert and listens to some music, and it's a reminder that we are far more alike than we are different.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
And one other thing, I always say also, because one of the arguments is about, what constitutes art or something that offends me or that I don't like. And I like to say that art is like food. Some of it we're going to think is absolutely delicious. Some of we're going to think is gross. Some we might even be allergic to, but we cannot live without it. It's what keeps us alive, sort of spiritually, and it what separates us from other beasts. We have these amazing imaginations, and our art is how we express that to each other.
It's crazy right now.
It is. I feel like there's so much noise. And adding to the noise, I don't think does anybody any good. Do I rage and scream and cry and retch and get all bent out of shape about what's going on privately? I do. But I don't think that expressing that is necessarily helping, calm things down. I hope that we can find our way back to a place where at least we listen to each other and talk to each other in a reasonable way, because the discourse has gotten really ugly, and obviously there's been political violence, which is never a good idea and always really scary. So you described it as things are crazy right now, and they certainly are. It's funny, in Madam Secretary, I played a biblical scholar, right, an ethicist, and I am not a biblical scholar by any stretch of the imagination. However, it suddenly occurred to me, like 3 or 4 years ago, that if you were someone that understood biblical prophecy, we are living in the Tower of Babel, right? Everybody is screaming on their phone. It's just cacophony. It's become almost meaningless. And to try to, cut through and get something that's actually heard is difficult, if not impossible right now. I don't know the answer to it, but I wish that we would all just shut up, calm down, and try to have a conversation.
I totally agree.
But I do think that in terms of keeping, the beautiful creativity of this country and the creative friction that we have, because we are a multicultural country, that we have a kind of creativity that you don't often see in other places. And I would also remind anybody on any side of the aisle, we meet at music and we meet at food. It's like those things are what enrich us, and those things are what's incredible about America. We are an amazing place, and we need to remember that, take advantage of that creative friction, and come up with the next big idea to get us out of this mess. It is pretty easy for people to call up their representatives and to leave a message at the switchboard for your senator or your congresspeople, and just say, I'm one of your constituents, and I really want you to support funding for the National Endowment for the Arts. It's important to be heard because, they work for you. So tell them what you want.
you play guitar too.
I do. Although right now I'm so woefully out of practice that I don't want to admit it. But this is another thing. To go back to our early conversation, it's funny because I just did the thing that I always yell at people about. I ask people from all walks, I say, are you an artist? And invariably, they say, no, no. But if I ask them, like if they strum their guitar in the basement or do they play, you know, bongo drums or sing in their church choir or make costumes for the kids to play, they're like, yeah. And so I say, mm-hmm. You are an artist. You're just not a professional artist. There's a big difference because I think that most of us participate in or at least are and certainly are exposed to the arts every single day. I mean, who doesn't listen to music every day? You know, who doesn't look in their closet and say, oh, I want to wear my sparkly butterfly t-shirt today? That's an aesthetic choice. So it's important to
remember. It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. Wake up and say, ah, I'm surrounded by art and it's meaningful to me.
The guitar, let's go back to that. Okay. Were you self-taught?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you pick that up?
Really in high school. I mean, I should have been a musician. I really should have been. That's where I have the most natural talent.
Well, you are.
But that's right.
It's
I am.
Not a professional
I should. That you're right. Thank you for correcting me. I should have been a professional musician, but I'm too dang lazy. I have some aptitude for it, but I picked up guitar in high school, and 3 months later, I was playing lead guitar in a band. And then I had these funny bands when I first got to New York, and then one thing led to another. Actually, I had this funny little band, and we were rehearsing at this place called the Charles Street Studio. We're making a demo. And this guy came in and he said, I think you guys are hot, man. I really want to put you in my club. And I said, what club? He said, the Bitter End. I was like, Bitter End? That's where like Bob Dylan and Jimi Hendrix and all these guys play. And so he said, finish the demo and then we'll talk about it. And the next week, I got my first movie, Diner. The bass player got a job writing for Esquire or something. And the drummer had his drum set stolen.
Aww.
So it all the rock and roll dreams went away.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How do you stay fit mentally and physically?
Well, I've been meditating quite a lot, which sounds very woo-woo, and it's not really. You know, one of the things that has happened in this meditation I do is that for some reason I have a lot of laughing fits during this meditation because the guy says, well, actually, Tay and I were doing it together, and this guy says, you might want to lie down for this meditation, or you can sit up. And Tay just quietly said, losers. And we laugh for about 20 minutes till our bellies hurt, till tears are streaming in our face. So laughter is good. Meditation is good. One of the things I've learned as I've gotten to my inappropriately advanced age is that everything in life is a practice. There are no finish lines, right? So you just got to keep doing stuff because, the tiniest little thing, if you do it consistently over a period of time, adds up to something huge. You know, I go to therapy, which helps me. And physically, I work out. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to say. I mean, and it's funny because Taya is the kind of person who, if she works out for 2 days, she like loses 10 pounds and gets ripped.
Yeah.
And I was always like a chubby kid. So I've been at this forever. And when people say to me like, well, you don't have to worry about it. You're skinny. I'm like, if you knew how many freaking hours I spend in the gym, on the elliptical, doing all this crap, it's hard work for me, but I enjoy it. Keeps me sane also.
Well, you look amazing, and you get better looking as the years go, I swear. What's your favorite comfort food?
Oh, man, it depends on the day.
Yeah.
I also really love cooking, so I would say, probably my last meal would be poached eggs on toast, but I make really good hummus. I love that. That's very comforting to me.
What's your favorite recipe that you cook besides hummus?
Oh, gosh, that's impossible. I mean, that's really impossible. I cook all kinds of stuff. But I guess this has been a bad year for me because this is the first year in a long time I don't have a garden. I'm a strange man. I like to do a lot of different kinds of things, which is okay. But I love gardening. And someplace in my 30s, like this sort of primordial Irish thing kicked in. I was like, must grow my food. So I make this eggplant Parmesan, but it has to be with the eggplant that I've grown and the tomatoes that I've grown and not the mozzarella. I don't make mozzarella, but that's something I love.
I love it. So does Taya cook or do you do all that?
She does.
Okay.
Yeah, and she's like I call her a cook with a home run swing. She either knocks it out of the park or she whiffs.
What's your favorite movie?
Oh, come on. Joanne, that's one of those... That's one of those questions. I think the movie that I've watched most in my life is The Great Escape. Because, I mean, Steve McQueen was so freaking cool in that movie. I think he's sitting there throwing the baseball in the cooler with his mitt. Oh, man. Anyway, that's high on my list.
Favorite actor or actress?
Well, my favorite actress is Taye Leone for other reasons. You know, there are actors who are really great. Who do the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And that, to me, is like, it's satisfying. It's like going to McDonald's getting a Big Mac. You know what it's going to taste like, whether you get it in, you know, Oregon or New York. I really admire actors who kind of go for it, you know, and try to do something different each time. And, well, one of the actors I love who we just lost, Robert Redford, who was sort of one of my heroes, because talk about a guy that gave back. I mean, he was really an amazing supporter of artists and nurturer of young artists and, you know, environmentalists and just, you know, a good man. But I would say Gene Hackman. Gene Hackman, for me, is the guy. You know, you get the, like, French Connection and his performance in Superman. I mean, hilarious. So, yeah, he's
you could hate him and then you could love him or laugh at him. Yeah, he's good. What's the secret to happiness in life?
Happiness is an accumulative thing that is not a straight line. It's, you know, some days are better than others, but, you know, you do the best you can. And I think the more love you can give, the happier you'll be. It's funny because a lot of people, you know, measure their lives by the love they receive, which is great. Don't get me wrong. But for me, it's I feel really more fortunate, more lucky to be able to love the people that I love, to be able to give it to them.
What would your current self tell your younger self?
You know, there are various versions of my younger self. And, you know, it's something I've thought about a lot. But I think I would say, come with me. I got this. You're going to be okay.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.